Welcome to the Healthy Doctor Podcast, where we host conversations about physician well-being. I'm Dr. Steve Sartori, Director of the Center for Well-Being at the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Throughout medical training and later in practice, there are events that prompt guilt or shame in the life of the healthcare professional. Recognizing and responding to these emotional events is imperative in protecting and promoting well-being. My guest on this episode is Dr. Will Bynum, whose research focuses on this very topic. Dr. Bynum is an associate professor of family medicine in the Duke University School of Medicine. Prior to arriving at Duke in October 2017, he served for 7 years on active duty in the United States Air Force. Will's military service included 4 years of faculty duties at the National Capital Consortium Family Medicine Residency Program, a deployment to East Africa as the senior medical director of a special operations command, and multiple overseas trips providing medical support to traveling congressional delegations. At Duke, Will currently serves as the residency program director and faculty advisor to the Duke School of Medicine Student Wellness Committee. Will's primary academic interest centers on the role of self-conscious emotions, such as shame, guilt, and pride, in the medical learning experience. He is conducting this program of research through a PhD in health professions education at Maastricht University of the Netherlands. I'm eager to speak with Dr. Bynum about this very interesting topic. Will, thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Healthy Doctor Podcast.
Thanks, Steve, for having me and for the opportunity. I'm glad to be here.
I've learned a bit about you before meeting you, read some of your writings and looked at some of your research. But before we dive into that, I'm wondering if you could share with us a bit about what led you to choose a career in healthcare and then family medicine.
I think I knew I wanted to be in a profession that served and that, you know, had the opportunity to help people early in my life. A lot of that came from parents who have lived lives of service. My mother's a nurse, and then also having great mentors of mine that were physicians along the way. And that predated what later turned out to be a real love of science and of the human body and anatomy. And then that evolved into, you know, a journey of sorts through medical school that culminated in the recognition that family medicine and primary care are where I can hopefully most make an impact in the lives of my patients and the system at large, but also a field that provides me with immense gratitude as a person that can partner with patients and develop relationships in order to help guide them to better health and also to help fulfill me in the work that I do every day.
What led to your interest in this topic of shame and guilt, for which you seem to be doing a lot of study and research about? What led to that?
Simply put, like much good research, I think, personal experience with the emotion that came in my residency training in response to a real challenging clinical encounter that I perceived to be a significant medical error at the time that led to harm for a patient, as well as getting out of a challenging relationship in which I had lost dimensions of myself and developed what turned out to be some chronic shame. And the aftermath of which presented the opportunity for me to do a lot of soul searching and to learn about myself and to recognize that this was an emotion I had been feeling really in both situations, but previously had not been able to articulate or identify. And so the power for me, really the transformative power in the healing I was able to undergo after I developed this understanding and knowledge led me to naturally want to understand how it was manifesting around me in our profession and in medical education. And so I began really looking for it and then studying it and researching it. And that's led us to where we are today.
So where did you get started? After you became more aware, you were able to kind of name what you were experiencing. What were some of your first steps into this?
Well, the first step was Google, which led me to Brené Brown, who many of your listeners will be familiar with. And if you aren't, I highly recommend her work because it makes this topic so candid and approachable and normalizes it. And so she was really the one that put it on the map for me. But I rather quickly jumped from that to the psychology literature and to the medical education and medical literature got just deeply immersed and lost in both of those bodies of work, and wrote a initial review article that just laid out these constructs and theorized about some of the ways that they manifest in medical education. And I didn't have a real strong sense of direction as to where this would take me at that time, only that I wanted to just understand more about it. And in doing so, identified what was a really significant gap in our understanding and ability to recognize and name it in medicine and medical education. Yet the fact that there was a lot of signal in the literature and in my anecdotal experience around me that this was an emotion of shame that was quite manifest and common, yet rarely talked about. And so that then led to additional exploration, talks, a couple of extra papers. And eventually, you know, I started to get a little bit of imposter syndrome because I was being asked, you know, at times to speak on this topic or being seen with some degree of expertise, yet having never researched it felt like a bit of a phony. And so eventually I had to say, you know, had to really dip my toe into the frankly intimidating world of research. And we developed a qualitative research program at that time that we're executing now.
What are some of the key things you've been learning along the way about shame and guilt?
A lot. I mean, the power of this topic is the degree to which its tentacles stretch, not only in medical education, the way we learn and the way we practice, but also who we are as people as we go through this experience. And so it's a hard question to summarize. What I will say is that shame, which, you know, is defined as an emotion that occurs when a person self-evaluates and assesses themselves to be globally deficient or flawed in some way. And Brené Brown puts it well, people who feel shame say, "I am bad." Whereas people who feel guilt attribute a transgression or an event to something specific that isn't related to them, the whole person, such as my effort on this task, my experience in doing whatever it is that led to the emotion in the first place. So one of the key things that kind of themes that we're finding in the work is that our learning and work environments seem to be inherently risky for experiencing these challenging emotions. And we're learning some of the reasons why they're risky and some of the factors that influence the tendency to experience shame, both in the environment and in individuals. And it's helping us understand that simply arriving into the career, into medical school, into training brings with it some degree of increased risk of emotional distress and of particularly of shame. It's not inevitable though, but there's a higher risk. And so we need to better understand the sources of that risk, how to engage with that risk, how to eliminate the risk that really is unnecessary. And I can give you some examples of that. And then, you know, wholeheartedly engage with the risk that remains.
So the risk is contextual and it's also individualistic. It seems like there's a multifaceted risk here. Would you be able to delineate some of those risks?
Sure. In our most recent study on shame in medical students, we identify what we call shame promoters or factors or influences that either predispose or increase the risk of shame or worsen shame once it's developed. And we identify those sort of in three different realms. There's the intrapersonal or individual promoters, and those are things that are unique to the individual. But in medicine, we may be self-selecting for some of these tendencies, and in the process of becoming a doctor or just getting to medical school, may be selecting for them. And so some examples are being perfectionist, a tendency to compare to others, being highly competitive, possessing performance-based self-esteem or self-esteem that's contingent on high levels of performance, particularly in the objective realm. Also, prior experiences in childhood, in education, in family dynamics, with siblings, et cetera. So there seem to be a host of individual factors that are present and contributing to shame reactions that may also underlie them for someone coming into the field. We also identified environmental factors. So the nature of our medical institutions, the nature of medicine itself, it's a high stakes endeavor. It's incredibly challenging to learn and to practice. The workload in and of itself in medical school is a predisposer to shame for some people because it makes the chances of struggle and failure inevitable for some people. And I would say struggle for all people, which is a normal part of learning. We also identified environmental factors such as mistreatment and psychologically unsafe environments, where the nature of the environment or the culture of the institution is such that people don't feel like they can safely engage with the risks of learning, that they can safely and authentically express themselves, be wrong, make mistakes. And that lack of safety then can enhance the feelings of shame that may follow those events. And then thirdly, we identified interpersonal factors or sort of risks for shame. And those came from the interaction between people within those environments. And so mistreatment was an example of that. Patient interactions, so the way that patients responded to trainees, you know, trainees harming a patient, interactions among peers. So if you're in an environment that is highly competitive, where people are trying to get to one up one another to, you know, gain some scarce resource, like a competitive residency slot, that competition and the inherent comparisons that it drives was actually highly prevalent in many of our participant shame stories. And so the net sum of all this is a milieu. It's a very complex milieu among a person, an environment, and a culture, and the other people in that environment, you know, and a part of which is this underlying deeply held emotional experience of shame or guilt or other deeply held emotions that is often unrecognized or unshared.
Person, environment, and culture. And it seems like for us as professional healthcare people, we are particularly at risk by at least most of those. So what really happens to a person as far as their, you know, trajectory in life, their medical education? What are the consequences of this?
It really is an emotion that has the potential to be very damaging. It's not inherently so. And that's important to note, that shame has hung around for as long as it has for a reason. I mean, it's an evolved emotion, and it has very important roles in terms of regulating social behavior, a very important role in the larger function of a society, and even at the individual level, regulating some of our behaviors. But shame that is chronic, that is deeply held, that is misplaced or misguided or undeserved, that is very intensely felt, can often be quite damaging in its outcomes. And so we've identified numerous of those, many of which align with what has been shown in psychology. So in our studies, people who have experienced shame, either profoundly and acutely or in a chronic sense, have reported isolating themselves, withdrawing from others, hiding aspects of themselves, particularly the ones that they feel are deficient or flawed, which then can promote disengagement. So a lot of disengagement from learning. People who previously had been very motivated and energized and willing to take risks of learning in the midst of a shame reaction will be much more insular, will be quiet, won't speak up, won't ask questions, will be hesitant to try a new task, especially if they had failed at a recent task. We've also found quite a bit of emotional distress and physical distress. So feelings of burnout, feelings of depression, anxiety, fear, and then the physical manifestations, which you know, may follow some that occur with other forms of emotional distress, like depression. So poor diet, poor sleep. One person said, "I felt like a sedentary bum during my shame reaction, just stopped exercising, got out of bed just before it was time to get to work, and just didn't care. He just lost sort of the motivation to take care of himself as well as to learn and engage." We also found unprofessional behavior, particularly in our resident study, that can manifest as in terms of, you know, defensiveness, of anger and lashing out, of the disengagement that sometimes we label as unprofessional, you know, where someone is actually struggling significantly emotionally and they seem to have checked out somewhat, and that can sometimes manifest as being unprofessional. And we found also significant impaired empathy, that within a shame reaction, especially if there were other negative emotional forces at play, such as burnout or depression, that one's ability to empathize with others, particularly their patients, could be severely impaired. And that in and of itself could prompt additional shame, which we called secondary shame, because the recognition that, oh gosh, now I'm not even empathizing with my patients. One participant told us he hoped his patient would die because he was so burned out and overwhelmed from taking care of them. And so it was dealing with so much shame related to underperformance. And then upon recognizing that he wanted his patient to die, he felt even greater shame because that was even further from the person he was trying to be and who he was when he came into medical school. So there is some, you know, underlying theory in psychology that, that could explain some of the impaired empathy in a shame state, but that was a real profound factor. And it may help explain some of why we see declines in empathy throughout medical training.
Boy, the negative impact personally and professionally and the potentiality for a downward spiral, shame feeding more shame sometimes. And, you know, as we learn about shame, it's helpful, but I think our listeners will want to know, so what are we going to do about it? What can we change? What are the interventions?
Yeah, you know, it's important. Every time I talk about this, whether a talk or, you know, a conversation like this, I always find myself about halfway through at a pretty tough place of acknowledging what shame is and how hard it can be and its damaging effects. And we have to acknowledge those openly, and we've got to get it out on the table, no matter how painful it is. But we can't sit in that sort of despair for long, because the good news about this topic, and I can say this personally and also just from what we're learning, is that there's absolutely an ability and an opportunity to engage with it constructively and make it ultimately a vehicle for growth, albeit a painful one at times. And so before I tell you the answer to your question, the only other thing I want to mention is that there can be positive effects of shame. You know, even in our studies, we found that if people don't beat themselves up for too long, if they transition off of the shame and onto something like guilt and something they can fix, then it can actually be a motivating emotion. But they often lament the fact that they had to suffer so much to get to that period of growth. So I don't want to depict this as a completely negative emotion. I think in terms of the shame that does impair us and that does threaten our sense of self and our well-being and our engagement, the way we even begin dealing with it is we just have to name it and we have to put it on the surface. And that may be individually where we are able to acknowledge what we're feeling to ourselves first and then to others, but also at a much broader culture and system level. We have to really think about, and I think commit in medicine and medical education, to being a culture in a system and an environment in which shame is an acceptable emotion to experience. When I say it out loud, it seems obvious because it's a human emotion, but I don't think it's acceptable right now to feel this. I don't think that it's acceptable interpersonally. I think we often feel weak when we feel shame. We feel like we're not supposed to feel that way. We want to hide it, which is a natural self-protective way to be. But I also think as a culture in medicine, we've somehow equated distress and negative emotion and shame and the like to being weak. And we've built this idea that impaired distress shouldn't happen, and that if it does, it's a problem that needs to be fixed, rather than acknowledging it as a part of the human condition, particularly in environments in which it's likely to happen. And just accepting that and making that okay and then engaging with it rather than trying to eliminate it or completely avoid it. So that's a long-winded way of saying that we need to normalize this occurrence in medical education and in medicine and be more open and authentic about it, our experiences with it, so that then we can talk about it more, we can put our heads around it, we can build community around the shared experience of it, and we can begin engaging with it.
Well, even though that was a long answer, it was a great answer. You know, we got to name it, we got to normalize it, we've got to engage it, we've got to talk about it. And I've seen some of your stuff where you actually do that. You actually engage in conversation, sharing stories one to another about their shame experiences and allow an opportunity to do just that. Expose it, shine a light on it, normalize it, grow from it. So thank you for really taking initiative to do that. That is absolutely outstanding. We're nearing the end of our time here, Will, and I'm just wondering, what else would you like to share with our listeners?
You know, I think self-compassion and self-love are the vehicles to transforming this culture and to allowing ourselves the space to be in a shame reaction and to come out of it. You know, we extend that type of empathy and compassion and love to our patients, and yet we sometimes hold ourselves to some sort of a different standard. And I think we need to maybe treat ourselves a little more like we treat the people that we serve, that we treat the people we love in our lives. And it sounds cheesy saying that a little bit, but it's just so true. It's really hard to beat yourself up and criticize yourself while at the same time you're validating yourself and loving yourself. The cognitive dissonance is often becomes more obvious, and that allows the space to say, you know, to validate yourself and say you are worthy, but you made a mistake, or you are worthy, but you're struggling. And then by overcoming that deep sense of unworthiness or ineptitude, you really do free up the self-esteem, the motivation, the cognitive resources to then focus on growth and healing and recovery, all of which are going to promote engagement, well-being, and resilience in the practice of medicine. That can't just be, though, at a large system level, that can't just be an individual journey. We've got to make that individual journey normal and acceptable. And really, all of us should be able and willing to go on that journey together and then build the community that will come from the experiences that we share.
Wow. Thanks for those encouraging words. I come away hopeful that some good work will continue to proceed and people will be freed. They'll be able to move forward. They'll be able to grow through their shame or guilt experiences and actually become even better on the other end. Thanks for bringing that to us, and I appreciate you joining me today, Will.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the platform and love the work you all are doing.
So much there for me to ponder and for you too, I'm sure. That sense that we in healthcare are so much at risk with our high performance kind of identity, basing our identity in our performance, which leads to opportunities for shame. And what do we do with it? We learn to grow through it by exposing it, naming it, normalizing it, engaging it. And at the real core of this is, who are we? Who are we? And with a God who loves us and accepts us, that helps to drive out shame. And with a God who declares to us, you are worthy. As Christians, we have great resources to deal with both shame and guilt. If you want to learn more about shame and guilt, you can certainly go to the book, The Soul of Shame by Kurt Thompson. The Soul of Shame by Kurt Thompson. Or read Brené Brown's book on Daring Greatly. Will mentioned Brené Brown as someone who got him interested in studying more, and she has much to say about the topic and understanding of it. At the CMDA Center for Well-Being, we help doctors and other healthcare professionals align with God, optimize well-being, and maximize influence. We offer professional coaching services to help you advance well-being, navigate transitions, or grow leadership skills. For more information, visit cmda.org/coaching. or email coaching@cmda.org. Our coach training courses afford the opportunity to learn the mindset, skills, and tools of coaching, equipping you to help others grow and develop without giving them advice. These popular courses are dually accredited, providing both Category 1 CME credits and coach training hours approved by the International Coaching Federation. To stay abreast of current course offerings, visit cmda.org/events. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Healthy Doctor. I hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, please leave a rating, as it could encourage others to subscribe to the podcast. Tune in again next month, and until then, care for yourself as you care for others.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.